Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I am Kyle, and tonight I've got Vanta Trading's Baba Yaga, Bear Goes Long, and special guest Jeff, also known as Two-Year Flipper. Do you guys remember when we were planning on doing like guest episodes once a month? Whatever happened with that? Why did we stop?
Fell off the wagon.
Kind of did, right? Like, we kind of started off strong. We got Two-Year Flipper in for like one of those initial ones. We got Macro Tactical, and then we just kind of stopped doing it. I wonder why. That's probably my fault.
Been that long.
How you doing, Jeff? You sounds like you're on the road there.
I'm on the road, Ubering. I Uber on the weekends for my seven kids. I don't get paid though. Nice.
Yeah. It's the worst version of Uber, right? You
get paid in hugs.
Exactly.
Baba, you're not quite to that age yet, right? You don't have to ferry him around quite as much.
I mean, we got a lot of, it's just athletics. It's during the week, man. Saturday, I'm a taxi cab, and then Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, Wednesdays, all practices.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but at least on Saturdays, you're sitting, you know, center court, mid court.
That's right, baby.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You like that? I always get those center mid, man.
Do you have second to fight row, other parents first row?
No, dude, man. I roll in there and just hit them with a big yawn and slide right in. I'm not sitting in the top of the bleachers for my kids' game. It's not going to happen.
Goddamn right, man. You sit there where you can yell obscenities at the refs.
Yeah, my wife is constantly telling me I need to be quiet, so.
That's the way it should be, right? All right, let's see. We got any show news or anything we need to cover here? I think next week. Oh, Flaherty's Humanity episode's coming out next week, man. That Ooh. Is going to be an awesome episode. I think you guys need to definitely check that out. We also have the sister show, Buck Starts Here, is going to be publishing part two of Thomas Jefferson on Monday. And then, Jeff, you want to take a minute telling what's going on, what you got going on with TradeFunder?
Well, sure, with TradeFunder, come on, we're trying to onboard more traders, get them live with T3. It's, you know, we're slowly building, we're starting to build a nice stable. I got to tell you, Discords are just not my favorite things to do in life. I believe it. I'm kind of in Discord hell because I'm kind of a one-man shop running it. And as you guys know from my expertise on this show, you know, I'm not great at, you know, managing, you know, video, audio, doing all that stuff. It's not my forte in life.
Right. But are you dealing with scammers too? That's the one that's always pissing me off more than anything else.
Apparently I'm a solid Bitcoin trader. I didn't know that. But, I mean, I guess I'm killing it. 70, 80K a week on Bitcoin. I was like, all right, let's go.
Oh, God, that's awesome. Let's take a look here then. So we got Two-Year Flipper here then. I feel like maybe we tossed the old topics out the window, and I'll just turn it over to you guys if you got any questions you want to ask them to lead this thing off.
I'll tell you what I'm doing. Like, me personally, I've been stepping away from the trading, like, all the, you know, constantly being in front of the screen scalping.
Yeah, you're kind of mentioning that you're only like really trading maybe 15 minutes a day. Like, why
scalping,
so little?
I'm trading when I know I can make money. I know the last 15 minutes of corn is just a solid trade. I know what I can do. You know I always yak about the K algo, but I just know it so well. I take advantage of what I know, and I don't bully the market. You can't bully it, but I take advantage of what I have to get what I want.
Yeah, that makes sense. Actually, there was a question that we actually got about the K algo. Do you remember that email I sent you from Caleb from Germany? Yeah. I don't know if you ever did send him a response, but I did promise I might ask him some of his questions. One of them was some clarifications. Some of them were about the Kyogo. It sounded like he had kind of a misunderstanding about what the Kyogo actually was. He seemed to think that you were talking about like an actual algorithm that was executing a strategy for you.
No, I'm not that smart. We all know that.
I'm definitely not. Oh, but yeah, if you want to just kind of briefly explain to him like what the Kyogo actually is and what it's doing.
Sure. I mean, the Kyogo controls all the fixed income spreads. It controls the two-year outrights as well. And then everything in ads, corn, bean, wheat futures, and all their spreads is operated by the Kyogo, which is a 40-60 algo FIFO allocation. And leaving whether it's somebody's market out of it for right now, basically what that does is if somebody sells 100 lot into a bid, the first 40 contracts go to whoever's market it is. If that's the FIFO portion of it. The other
60%, so that's whoever was there first.
That's whoever was there first. The other 60% goes in allocation, and that's where you can, if you know when these orders are going to come in, take advantage of the allocation.
And that's where the timers kind of, the timers and the Kyogo are kind of play together for you then. You need kind of that understanding of the Kyogo to understand what sort of like offers you're putting out there when to determine what kind of fills you're going to get, correct?
Absolutely. Like, I mean,
okay.
I described it the other, I think on the first podcast I was on. If you guys are all sitting out there with 100 lots and I just say, I'm going to jump the line and put 105 lots out there, like 20 times, I jump the queue. And I grab 20 contracts or whatever I grab. And yeah, it's a game, and it's you have to be very careful with it. Because especially in fixed income products, because I mean the size has gotten so absurd in the market. You remember when I started, when I was trading a lot of size in the 2 year and doing a decent amount of the volume.
Mm-hmm.
When the 2 years were only doing 120,000 contracts a day. So if I were on 5,000 contracts, you're like 3-4%.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Well, I mean, contracts wise, it's not a ton of contracts, but I don't want to say I was one of the bigger traders because I'm always a high volume trader.
You never had the size on all at once. It was just, it's always in, out, in, out, yeah, in, out.
10, 20, 30, yeah. 10, 20, 30 all day. But now the two year has a million contract average, I believe.
Dang, has it gotten that high?
I think so.
Jeez, it's been a while since I looked at it.
I never look at the 2 year. Actually, I commented the other day, I brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just flabbergasted on how horrible the contract is.
Do you think maybe that's why you're not getting as many bond traders as you thought you were in? Or you're hoping you would get?
Trade funder?
Yeah.
I think the problem with most of the bond traders is I think they all realized they were relying on BS fills.
Yeah.
And, the front ends of some of the firms, especially Apex, they gave out advantageous fills for the local, for the trader.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, the sim fills.
Yep.
Yeah, sim fills, exactly. And I think a lot of those traders don't want to go to the bonds because none of them can make it without those fills.
Those fills are definitely helpful.
to their credit, they're probably all right.
Right.
But I did get sick of hearing it, that they were all God's gift to the bond world when you were taking advantage of fills.
Okay, that explains some of the text, the tweets maybe that were flying around.
Oh, sure. I commented on it. I got sick of people I never care if anyone's successful. That's fine. But, you know, don't tell me you're a bond trader when you're doing 20 Apex accounts, a 5-lot over 20 accounts. I'm executing 100-lot. No, you're not. You're not participating in the market.
Right. You're not even in the market. You're in sim
right.
land.
I mean, flip 100-lot in the bonds. Let me know how that goes for you.
One day, maybe. But not this week. Oh, how you guys? What do you guys got for us here? Any questions you guys want to ask?
I mean, from what I was tracking on Twitter with some of these people, you are trying to do some mentoring or guidance in the Discord. What are you doing there, or what can you share about that?
Sure. I mean, you know, there's really no reason to use. You know, there was no reason to use my link in TradeFunder. You know, per se. You know, I don't offer any deals like TradeFunder. There are no sales with TradeFunder. So I had to drive traffic to wanting to sign up with TradeFunder. So I offered them access to me. You know, people like I jumped on stage today. I think I only had like 12 people listening, but I described my strategy for the role, how I look at it. And then the traders who are close, like once they start getting close to going live, I spend a lot of time with them on the phone, you know, mm-hmm. helping them out. And, you know, I discuss, look, I've been through it all. I've had successful runs. I've made an insane amount of money, like 5 days in a row. And I've also fat fingered seven figures away with 3 minutes to go on a trading day. So I've had the highs mm-hmm. and lows of being a trader. I know how that goes. So, you know, I discussed that with the traders. One trader who has been doing really well, he's going live, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday. It all depends how long that process takes.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent a lot of time with him, you know, preparing him for, you know, being in the live market, being backed by a firm like T3.
What are some of the things that... that you, when you talk to them, like what are some of the things that they're worried about or some of the things that maybe you're telling them to.
They just kind of want to know my experience. Like, mm-hmm. you know, for instance, I mean, one of the great things about TradeFunder is, you know, the free resets.
Right.
Now, while the rules are tighter than some of the firms, you know, the free resets. So this trader, you know, he received a payout and he was like a day away from receiving another payout and he blew his accounts. He hit the mm-hmm. daily loss limit, had to restart again. So, you know, that was a massive, you know, that's a setback for him.
Right.
And, you know, I told him, I mean, come on, it happens to everyone. We all have setbacks trading.
Mm-hmm.
And so I worked him through that. Then he had another reset or two. And then he just went on a run that's just insane what he's doing right now. Like he found he's in a great place as a trader and he just makes awesome decisions and he's really reined in his risk reward, which is by far the most important thing that TradeFunder is looking for is yeah. the risk reward for traders.
Makes sense. I think that you mentioned that the last time that we chatted, was that a couple weeks ago? So they want to see that you're risking a dollar to make two. Yeah.
Right. I think that's what people miss when they come to these firms. They're like, I want to make on 100% of my trades. So that's impossible. You don't make on 100% of your trades.
Yeah.
And they want to keep their percentages up at like 60, 70%. Look, they would rather see you at 30% on your winners. Mm-hmm. They don't care if your winners are, if you have more losers than winners, as long as you're like, if you're locking your losers, say at 200 per trade, whatever it is, but you're making 500, well, they're going to be like,
that works.
That's a phenomenal risk reward.
Yeah, 30%, 2.5 to 1 is.
Baba, what's your win rate?
My win rate, I haven't looked at it. Like,
it's roughly in the 40s,
week,
though, right?
But it's hovers around 40, 30, high 30s.
What's your average take on a trade? What's your average risk to reward?
Well, that's why it works. Cause it's, you know, I mean, if you pull back in a chunk of, I'm trying to pull it up right now for this last like couple months. And I can tell you, but I mean, the only way it works is because of that. Like I lose more than I win percentage wise, but the winners outsize the losers, you know, by a little more than, you know, 2-1 or whatever. So it gives, you know, it's like a small drip, you know what I mean?
It's, you're not looking to hit a home run every week, but base hits here and there,
well, add up
over time,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, it'd be nice to hit some home runs, but this market hasn't been the home run hitting kind lately, so.
Yes, Joel, this might be the first podcast video recorded while driving. We're not taking video, though. It's just the audio.
Yeah, the risk-reward thing is funny. I mean, so I kind of changed how I approach trading. It's like in my Discord, I've been calling out my gold trades.
Yeah, that's actually a great point because you had a Twitter post on that too about, you know, you don't care about a $3 move in gold. You want like a $25 move.
Sure. So the trade I called this morning, I said to sell a 3-lot in gold at, I called it out in the room at 89.3. And I said my first out was at 85.1 on one contract. I got out of one more at 81.1. It went back up. I sold more, went all the way down to 77, covered, you know, I was covering more. And then, you know, I said, hey, I think I still had 2 or 3 on. And I said, hey, my stop's back at 85. I don't want to look at this thing the rest of the day. And obviously I got stopped out because gold went all the way up to like 910. But that's what I go for. I go for a kill. Like I had one contract on. It was $13 for me, which is a nice winner in gold. That's $1,300 in a one lot.
Damn, right?
So it's definitely, I definitely trade way different in gold, you know, because that's not how I trade in fixed income or corn. Because I'm just going for one tick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be a completely different.
It is, and I'm not great at it yet. I'm getting there, but I'm not great at it.
What do you think your struggles are in trading gold then?
I'm a short trader. I think that's a major flaw. I prefer being short all of the time. And
interesting.
I can't let it go. Like, if you would have looked at the trade today, I sold 89.3. I sold, I forget, I think I sold 85.5s.
Mm-hmm.
Covered, you know, back up when so now I was short too from 85.5 when we were trading 77 still. I had 3 on at one point. I covered 1 at 77, and I let the other 2 go, and I took them all the way back up to 85 because I really thought we were going down. And I proceeded to sell 4 at, I think, 86.1, and that was a quick tap out. I think I got tapped out at 88.1 on the way back up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a flaw because I can't, like, I'm kind of blinded by the fact that I always want to be short.
It's really interesting that you mentioned the not being able to, or the difficulty in letting go of the idea or the trade too, because that's something that Baba, you were talking about in the voice chat this morning. I actually wrote it down as a topic that I wanted to kind of explore a little more because it's something that I struggle with too, like letting go of the trade. Like I had a really good long on YM today that I didn't want to give up, that I let come back to break even on me. But then there's also that urge to like revenge enter once your stop gets hitting out. And that's where I think I get into trouble is like when I give into that urge. Baba, I think you talked about, that's kind of the idea you were talking about when you're fighting for a trade that's not taking place.
Yeah.
I don't know. You want to talk a little bit more about that idea?
Well, like, I mean, today's a perfect example of if you stayed married to the long idea. I mean, obviously there was some overhead resistance. I mean, obviously now, but everyone's aware of most everyone's aware of how last week traded gap down on whatever it was, news, and then run back up to that swing and then gap down on the news over the weekend, run back up to the swing. The anticipation of trading just a little bit higher than where we were before piling in or closing out longs and trying to get positioned possibly for a late day fade if we couldn't continue through some key resistance. We had all the check boxes, you know, for the most part, on some trend day vibes for NASDAQ specifically. You know, I wanted to be long that. I didn't want to be long because the market was up so much as what we were trading above. I felt right. good about that. And then off the open, the first 30 seconds, RTH VWAP, RTH mid, trapping shallow pullbacks once we based up there for a little bit. But we knew we had this news pending that was, you know, going to be the do or die in QKIP, kind of just stalling in that area. So once we broke down, I mean, it was rather quick, but then the idea of the long was just over because mm-hmm. you've just sucked completely back into the range. And so then it's, you know, either you just say, well, it's Friday, I took that stop, I'm going to just let it do what it's going to do, or you stay married to trying to get long, in which case you could have probably lost $1 million today. Or you try to get in where you fit in, which we discussed a little bit of that idea throughout the morning of like, you know, hey, this 50s, 750s, 780s is super key. Like below that, it's just a washout. I didn't trade it, but obviously that is what transpired. But staying married to an idea can get you broke. I mean, you fall in love with one idea and you lose perspective on how the market is developing that auction in that day. And it's tough. I mean, there was a point in my trading timeline where a day like this, I would have been fishing to try to buy something somewhere. I want to, you know, okay, every little 30 second, anything, I'm going to try to get on that. And instead of scalping a backside trade, which there was a couple of opportunities to do that today, not well advised, but if you're aware of the fact that, hey, I'm going to backside scalp this because I'm terrible at joining a short side trend or whatever your case is, you just got to remember your backside scalping. You got to have close targets and get to break even as quick as possible. What I would do in the past is I would nab a nice little, what looked like a great long, and then I would want to hold it for the entire retracement of a move. And so you get 70 points in profit on a handful of contracts, and then you just eat a full stop. Let it come all the way back past entry and make a new low, stop out. As soon as the market slows and there's another bid that shows up, I would pile into it, take another full stop. And then, you know, I mean, how many times can you do that before you just completely out of mental capital and, you know, daily loss, you know, parameters start to come into question. So yeah, I think that whole idea of staying in love or falling in love with a trade, especially in this environment where one tweet, and can I just say without being too much of like a whatever, but like there's a lot of like, oh, welcome to the big show, kids, if you've never traded during a Trump presidency. But like, I would encourage everyone, like if that frustrates you or you know, you hear people saying that and you're like, well, what do they know that I don't know? They don't know anything. Okay. No one knows what's going to mm-hmm. happen. And no right. one knows when he's going to say random stuff. No one knows how it's going to come out. No one. So the people that are saying that, acting as if they have some insulation against this injections of volatility, is just grandstanding. The reality is we're all hanging on by a thread, hoping when we're in a trade, he doesn't say anything, and praying to God we don't get gap through if he does. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
All right. That's off my chest now. We can have fun. So you probably don't make it a habit of listening to the podcast, but we've talked a little bit on and off about trader funding programs. And I was one of the ones, along with a lot of these guys, that were burned by unnamed firm that went out of business last fall that, you know, it was really a frustrating experience. I don't want to harp on it. Everyone's probably tired of hearing it, but that made me realize the counterparty risk of someone else holding such a large or any amount of capital that's owed to you, or the time associated with getting through the hurdles, whatever they may be, whether that's 10 days or whether you are extra careful and it ends up being 20 or 30 days or whatever. So I think I said last week something along the lines of like, you'll never catch me trading one of those things again, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you did.
I literally sent a message in Discord just a few minutes ago or earlier to someone saying, honestly, with the way the headline risk is right now, I'm thinking about putting some of the risk onto a trading firm for like a little stretch, which makes me feel like a total flip-flopper. but like that, at least in that environment, typically the risk I can buy with, say, $500 is way more drawdown room than $500 will buy me in a cash account, or $1,000 for that matter, right? Mm-hmm. Like the leverage and the, you know, what I can trade with that versus what I could trade by buying one of these random accounts and doing that whole deal. So would you explain a little bit, Jeff, if you know off the top of your head, like what is the typical, is the process with TradeFunder typical to like most of the general other funding firm partners where you trade for a period of time, once you jump through all the hoops, make the money, don't lose all the money, then how does that go? How much time is that? How does that work?
Well, the biggest difference between TradeFunder and I'm not positive on everyone else, but I kind of get the gist. TradeFunder, once you pass their program, they are going to deposit money in an account for you with your name on it. It's not a shared account. It's not a house account. It's your own account. Now, to get to that barrier, let's just say if somebody opens up one incubator account, which you that's a simple goal. Like, we're going to leave the rules out of it for right now.
Okay.
The simple goal for TradeFunder in the incubator program is to have five $250 days. So if you open up an account on Monday and you make $250 every day, let's just say you stop at $250. At the end of Friday, you're going to, you know, you can upgrade to phase two. Now, unfortunately, we got rid of the $99 account, which was the greatest deal in the world that I don't think people realized that it was $99, but there was no activation fee.
Oh, what?
Now we lowered it to $49, but now there's a $149 activation fee. So in that instance, you make it through Monday through Friday, upgrade on Friday, and now you're in the pre-prop stage where you can get paid. Same thing, you know, five $250 days, and you can request a $625 check because you can pull out 50% of what you make. And then, you know, it's, look, prop firms, this is just how it is. It's an 80-20 deal. So you would walk away with $500. Now, would I suggest somebody pulling out when you just make $1,250 your first week? No, I would tell you to build it up a little more. But if traders want to pull out the money, given what has happened to other firms, you always have to protect your bottom line. Get your investment back.
Yeah.
And I think as somebody who was part of that firm, because I backed my son in, you know, said firm, we were all, you know, everyone was blinded by, you know, what was done. Phenomenal salesman, you know, we've gone through all this, but it was all BS and everyone got fooled. And a lot of people had life-changing money in those accounts. I mean, I know what my son had built up, and I mean, my son had north of 120 built up. I mean, it's life-changing money for people.
Yeah.
So the biggest difference with TradeFunder is just a partnership with T3. T3 is an FCM. We don't have to worry about anything. It's not a third party. You don't have to go through a third party. You don't have to worry about a house account. The risk then becomes the firm. You're basically turning, we're all parents here. We've all bought Roblox or Fortnite bucks. We've all spent real money to buy virtual money, and we've kind of, you know, we flipped it. Like, you're earning money in sim that you're turning into real capital to back you in a trading account.
Question from JMac asking if you can use Sierra Charts after completing and passing your evaluation, or are you locked into whatever platform you signed up with?
Okay, you cannot use Sierra in the incubator and, you know, pre-prop account. Okay. Once you're live, you can use any platform. They have deals like you can use TT if you want. I mean, you know, unless you're a scalper, I really don't see the reason to use TT.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even I, like, I'm sitting on the sidelines basically the last 2 months. I've given TT like $2,500, you know, whatever it is, $2,300. It's a lot of money, you know, just overhead when I don't use it. Like, I don't need it to trade gold.
Right.
You know, I could use anything to trade gold. Oh, I do use it for corn. I'm sorry. But I mean, if I just traded gold, there's no way I would pay for TT.
So step one, jump through the hoops 5 days. Step two, jump through the hoops 5 days. How long do you live in that interim period between?
You will not make it more than 6 pay cycles.
Okay.
So a cycle is, you know, so you can get paid as in little as 5 days, obviously. So if you hit them every day, our view, or, you know, the team's view, a trade funder, is we don't want to trade, pay people in SIM dollars. As a firm, that's not a good business model because, you know, you're paying them for fake trading. They would rather move that trader to the live environment and be partners with them. And if said, you know, if said trader makes it, then they own 20%, you know, they get 20% of the rake. So to answer your question, you're probably going to get paid out 2 to 3 times, and then they're going to move you live. And it will be faster if you have phenomenal stats. If you have phenomenal stats and you show a risk reward of like 4 to 1 and you're just killing it, they might move you in a week before you even get a payment.
You said one of the traders that you were working with, like 4 days and they were,
yes,
funded, like straight out of the, mm-hmm, incubator program. Was it the incubator program or did they do straight to funded?
Incubator. So, I mean, they really look at stats, and the biggest stat that's the most important to them is that risk reward.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see phenomenal risk reward. If you're risking a dollar to make 50 cents, but you're hitting at 85%, it's impossible. Nobody's going to hit at that rate. Hey, you might be able to go on a streak and you might be able to do it for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but eventually, you know, the luck will turn.
It's just too much noise.
It is. I mean, and hey, there are traders that thrive on that. I mean, I guess if you would really look at my risk reward.
I think the problem is, like, the higher the win rate, then the more catastrophic it seems like those losses end up becoming. Like, when you are at an 85% win rate, those 15% losses tend to eat up like 90% of your capital.
Well, that's when they invert the risk reward and
right,
they let a loser run to the hills because they're so desperately chasing that 85% win rate.
Right.
Yeah, I'm nowhere close. I'm not in the ballpark of that. I'm 37.69% winning trades.
What's the profit factor on that though?
Let me see. There's so many numbers and so many rows. You'll have to let me.
While you're looking that up, we got some other questions rolling in for 2 year here then. CP like to know what benefits come with a live account with TradeFunder versus a personal live account. And he'd like to know if they scale capital beyond the profits made by the trader.
They do scale based on your results. They have money to invest. I mean, we want to find 100 traders. Like, I mean, they want to add 50 to 100 traders this year to their desk. Mm-hmm. That's 7.5 traders a month we're looking to put live. It's been a struggle to find them right now, but, you know, we don't have we're gaining ground in the space.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully we find more traders that come over so they will scale you up. Look, I'm not going to lie to anyone. Come on. I trade my own personal account. I'm not backed by anyone. I've never been backed by anyone.
Yeah, you've made that pretty clear, yeah.
Most of the people listening could benefit from a little bit of time talking to you, I think. And
working, you know what? If you have the chops and you have the money to back yourself, there's no greater gig in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been times when I tried to throw size around in the Fed funds. Yeah, I wish I was backed by somebody. I mean, losing north of 500 in a day, it's not fun, especially when it's your own money.
Jesus, yeah, I bet.
But, you know, to the same degree, when you start the year January 2nd or 3rd, and that you go 5 straight days of making 6 figures, there's not a higher high than that either.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, you know, it comes and goes. Like, you have ridiculous runs, but yeah, I would never tell anyone not to trade their own personal account. It's just, there's a lot of people that don't want that risk. And if you can earn simulated money, put it into an account, you know, and you know, you have 15, 20, and then you slowly grind it up. Hey, that's the greatest gig in the world. And then if you're showing results, they're going to let you scale. They'll let you build. They want, because at the end of the day, it takes one trader. They need one trader that makes them, you know, 50 to 100,000 a month that changes this whole model for them. Right.
So to speak to some of the benefits that come with an account with TradeFunder, I think is the main one's going to be signing up with your link and getting access to you, like having you to give advice, bounce ideas off of. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we all know I'm not the greatest ES or NQ trader. You know, NQ, I call my crack or my charity, whatever you want to call it. I can't get away from it, but I
just can't quit it.
Just be better suited than somebody just kicking me right in the nuts. And, you know, that's going to be less painful than the money I'm going to lose.
What was that? Was that a South Park line? How about you just give me the money you're going to spend?
Yes.
I take you out back, kick you in the nuts, and we call it a day.
That's exactly it. Like that. Sometimes I feel
it's
like
not.
That
it could cute. Definitely be one.
Oh no, that was Vegas Vacation. That's what that was from.
Yes, that is from Vegas. Yeah.
So yeah, it sounds like the best benefit is if you're a fixed income trader, then, or at least like if you want to get into like your wheelhouse and take advantage of like basically a dying skill set, as you've said in the past.
Fixed income's a dying skill set. I mean, I always suggest, and come on, I work for TradeFunder. You know, I'm our partners with them and whatnot. Look, the straight to funded accounts for fixed income, they're expensive. They're $3.99 an account. Mm-hmm. You can't do the incubator account with straight, you know, fixed income. So I understand why people wouldn't want to sign up for that, because that's a lot of money. However, if you've got the chops to do it, to me, fixed income's always been the easiest trade.
I feel like J-Mac should be jumping on that, right, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, he's the king of accounts. So if he wants to explore fixed income, that would definitely be...
Isn't he trading
fixed
income?
What is he trading? Well, I thought he was trading a little more NQ and ES lately.
I thought he was trading 2 years.
Is he? J-Mac, what are you trading right now? He's probably trading everything.
Probably a little bit.
Soybeans. So is that UCP trading soybeans? That's the best place to learn order flow, from I've been told.
It is in their calendar spreads.
Okay, so J-Mac's mainly UB.
I mean, bonds are, I guess, that doesn't technically, is that qualifies fixed income? I mean, bonds technically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bonds are fixed. Yeah. So the fixed incomes are the Ultra Bond, the 30-year. Yeah,
ZBUB.
Yeah, ZBUB, TN, ZN. And then we don't pay attention to the ZF and ZT, because they're just, I don't want to mess around with stuff that's $7 a tick. I just don't. Look, I mean, NQ, because, you know, that adds up fast. But, you know, mm-hmm. in the 2 year and the 5 year, I don't see the point of trading a contract worth $7, especially when most people have non-member rates and they're paying $2.50 a round turn or whatever it is. You can't make money doing that.
$2.50, I think it's more than that, actually.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm just talking about like with some of these firms. I think a lot of the firms have, I think fixed income might be like $2.04 or something. I know one of them, but you know, the X platform, I think they're under $2 a round turn.
Jeff, with the people that you're working with, the ones that are the most successful, what product mix are they trading?
One trader is a gold trader. The two traders that just are going through are, they're going to make them both stick to NQ, though they were both ES, and the other trader that made it through is CL.
Interesting. So they were ES, but they're telling them to trade NQ?
No, they traded both. And then one of the things TradeFunder will do is they're going to look at your stats. And when you go live, they're going to make you focus on one, because they don't want to overwhelm you in the beginning. They'll absolutely let you add another contract. But like the first week or two, you know, like the first month, they're gonna keep the daily loss limit on you when you go live, because they don't want they don't want you to blow out. Mm-hmm. You know, you worked hard to get to be back. So they're going to keep that on you probably for the first 2 weeks. But after that, they're going to unclip your wings and let you fly and do your thing. But they have mm-hmm. an investment in you. They want to see you do well.
Do they make you do any sort of like reports or like
no.
reviews of anything?
I'm sure you talk to the risk manager. I mean, I know the risk manager. He will, if traders need to reach out, but one of the things, if you go through the program with TradeFunder and you make it to T3, I'm a phone call away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody's struggling, whatever, call me up. That's what I'm there for.
Well, there's another reason too, and that's to bat for the traders too. If something happens,
I do go to bat for a lot of the traders. If something happens with accounts, as long as everyone's always polite, that's all you ask for. Be polite and be polite to the customer service. Like,
right.
Look, the rules are in place.
They're there to help you.
I mean, the customer support at TradeFunder has been phenomenal. Out of everything I get, that's the rave review I get.
Mm-hmm.
That they use, you know, by email, they're responding within 10 to 12 minutes.
I've noticed the two firms that I really like lately have been putting a huge emphasis on customer support. I think that's a good place to put an investment in.
It should be a top priority for every firm.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing more frustrating than not being able to speak to a person when you have an issue.
I mean, come on. You know what? I saw my son when he used the Apex, you know, when he was with Apex mm-hmm. and he used them. I mean, dude, you would have a customer question, whatever, be like 3 days to a week before they got back to you. Like, okay, come on, guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you talked about the daily loss limit, and especially like when you first go live, they're going to keep the shackles on you pretty tight. I'm thrilled to hear that. That's kind of really been the biggest shift for me over the last month is the ability to really lock into my daily loss limit. And it's been huge. I just went through a 7-day drawdown that, you know, in the past would have blown accounts, but I still have the accounts because of that daily loss limit, you know, hard rule. So that's cool. That's really positive.
It's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, I understand, you know, the problem is Apex kind of changed the industry with the 1 day to pass. So you get a lot of
That's just a lottery ticket. That's just people playing scratch offs.
It's or meme coins. Not that I've ever done that, but that's another thing you can call it. Yeah, meme coins. Those don't work either. I have about as successful a rate as a scratch off.
You just gotta buy the ones Flarey tells you to.
You'll find the Mung. Pull tabs.
Mung. Pull tabs too. He's also really good at those.
I found one or two, but you know what? I got sick of losing money. I mean, and I would only throw one soul at those things towards the end. And mm-hmm. I'm like, God, it's like, it doesn't, you know, I'm like, I'm just throwing $200 out the window here.
I think the primary winning strategy was, you know, how to look for likely winners, but you were playing like 20 to 1, 30 to 1 odds and going, okay, I'm going to invest in 20 or 30 of these. One of them is going to hit and it's going to pay for my losses. But I won't speak for him, but that's what I gathered.
Yeah, Flarey's good at picking he's got the magic, I think, when it comes to picking a good name.
It is mostly, it's probably mostly the name. I mean,
yeah,
it all those things. I mean, it's very rare you find one that just goes up, but there was that one Burt coin. Like, I think it was
Burt Kreischer?
No, it was like some dog. It was BERT. It went from a 1 million market cap to 100 million in 1 day. It was crazy. Oh, somebody told me to buy it at 2 million too.
What about that Hawktua coin?
See, that'd be one I'd invest in. I'd buy it. Yeah. Oh, shit. It was 90% of my net worth in the crypto space.
God, dude. Oh, let's see. We're getting towards the end here. I think I got one other question here. So JM was asking just a question about the edges in the market. And you're talking a little bit last time we chatted about your edge kind of like disappearing, you thought. I just wonder if you can kind of speak towards like why you think that is, like why the edge is kind of going away in the fixed incomes.
You know what? It's just becoming more and more automated. I mean, if you really look at it, the 2 years is a really automated contract. You can just tell by how orders are coming in and out.
Is that adding more noise, you think? Like where
it's just making it really difficult. Like, and mind you, I don't scalp the 2 year anymore because of the $7 a tick. But look, I spend so much time, and that is my first, you know, like as much as I love the bonds and everything, the 2 year was without a doubt my most favorite contract to trade. Mm-hmm. That was the peak of my trading, you know, career on just how I dominated and didn't really lose in that market.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, people just don't understand how you can't lose. It was a ZERP environment. The twos moved 7 ticks a day and I had insane inventory. I mean, it doesn't take much to figure out that you're not going to have many losing days, you know, with everything lined up like that. But as far as the 30 year, it's hard to explain. You know, part of it's probably me getting older and I just don't have that.
Losing those quick twitch reflexes?
Yeah, I just don't love sitting in front of the screen all day anymore. Like, it just beats me down.
Right.
I mean, I literally want to be in front of the screen 15, 20 minutes trading. Now, that will change during the fixed income rolls. Look, there's always going to be an edge on the fixed income rolls. I talked about this in my room today that, look, when the fixed incomes are going, you got March and June, and then you got the calendar spread. So you bring up the calendar spread. What do I want to be here? Do I want to be long or short the spread? And you look which side's giving you the edge. So if the spread's trading even at a quarter, and that's just what the spread is. So let's just call them. And you're like, do I want to leg the spread at even? Well, no, you don't. Because there's only a quarter tick in it for you. Mm-hmm. Why do you want to do that? So you'd want to be, you'd be looking to sell March and buying June. So then you look, you're like, okay, those are my two outcomes right there. That's what I want. Well, see if one of the sides is doing something. Is there what did I say? You wanted to sell March by June. Is somebody selling June? That's what you're looking for. Is somebody selling June where you can pick up an edge? And if that's true, that's where you're concentrating. You always have to get the back month first. You do not have it. Like, I'll go to my grave on that one. Get the edge in the back month. Do not worry about the front month.
Oh, okay. All right. I think... Does anybody else have any other questions? Because, man, I feel like we've kind of covered a lot of stuff here.
It's always fascinating to hear. I mean, the like world of trading of thinking like, let's get positioned in the back month and then blah, blah. Like, that's the side of the coin that I've never looked at.
I would kind of like, is there a way, I wonder, maybe we could set up some sort of collaboration on one of these? Like maybe a role of something that we can kind of look at with you. That might be kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. I mean, people, I know I keep saying this and, you know, people are shocked by me when I say this stuff. Like, I'm not that, I'm about as simple as it comes with trading.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'm trying to open it, Joey. Hold on, I'm getting my kid.
I think we've all been there. We've all been there.
Okay, he's got it. So yeah, I mean, with the role, I try to tell people I'm as simple as possible. You know, like I keep it as simple as I can when I trade. Like people overcomplicate things, like why I don't use charts and stuff, because they don't really speak to me.
Right.
And I just, numbers speak to me. I use numbers and I try to keep everything as simple as possible. And the best piece of advice ever given to me about the roll and the spreads is get the back month first, because that's the harder contract to get. That's the less liquid contract to get.
That makes a ton of sense.
You're always going to be able to get the front month because you've got, you know, in the beginning of the roll, 80% of the volume's there. 90% right. of the volume is executed in the front month.
How long does a roll typically last? Like, how long is your trading window?
Unfortunately, only 3 to 4 days now. It used to be about 7 to 8 mm-hmm. About 10 years ago. Now it's 3 to 4 days.
Yeah. Another disappearing edge, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, that's true.
But I do think probably going to have to put a pin in this one for today's episode. I can hear 2 years son getting in the car with them. I think let you catch up with your boy and get him home safe. So please join me in thanking Baba Yaga, Jeff, to your flipper, and Bear Goes Long for dropping by today. Thank you, everybody here for listening to The Bitter End. Remember, you can show our panelists some love. You can click on those links in the show notes. Jeff's links will be the first ones after the episode description if you want to take advantage of those deals with TradeFunder. You visit bandoftraderspodcast.com so you can stay up to date with everything related to the show, and vantatrading.com to trade with Baba Yaga every day. We'll be back soon with another exciting episode, but till that day, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.